everyone. Welcome to Cross Defense. Brand new church year we're in right now. Happy Advent. I hope and trust that your Thanksgiving was blessed. You were with family and friends giving thanks to God. You know, that shouldn't be just a special day of the year. It's every day that we as Christians are to give thanksgiving, especially for our Lord Jesus Christ. We are especially thankful that we can come to you and help your apologetics, your defense of the Christian faith. That's what apologetics means. It's a biblical word, and that's what we do here on Cross Defense. We are thankful to our underwriter of this program, Luther Academy, doing great things, wonderful things around this world. Conferences all over the globe, publishing Logia, the Journal of Lutheran Theology, and the Lutheran Confessional Dogmatic Series, just coming out with a brand new volume on the Trinity. Check them out, lutheracademy.com. Well, you know, this is the time of year when we hear a lot of people in the church and outside the church talk about Santa and Jesus. Some of them, it's Santa versus Jesus. And so to help, especially parents, grandparents, pastors, teachers, friends, all those that have to deal with little ones, we have a wonderful apologist, Natasha Crane. She's been on before. She blogs with lots of followers, including me, Christian Mom Thoughts. She's got a new book out. And so welcome back to Cross Defense, Natasha.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Oh, our pleasure. Now, I think last we had you on, you were just starting to wrap up the manuscript of your new book, and I think it's on the horizon to be published here early in 2016. Is that right?
Right. It comes out on March 1st. So, yeah, there's always a long time before when you actually send the manuscript to the publisher, and when it comes out, it seems like a long wait, but it is available for pre-order now, and it comes out officially on March 1st.
Excellent. While we're on that, tell the viewers a little bit about it. I understand you can actually even pre-order it at this point. Is that correct?
Right. Yes, it's available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com for pre-order. It's called Keeping Your Kids on God's Side, 40 Conversations to Help Them Build a Lasting Faith. And basically, it just takes 40 of the biggest questions, the biggest challenges that kids will encounter to their faith, and it breaks them down one chapter each, just 5 to 6 pages at a time, so that parents can easily get up to speed on what these issues are, what the questions even are to start with, and then how do we begin to answer them for our kids. So it's a guide for parents who realize, yes, it's really important in today's world that we raise our kids with an understanding of why we have good reason to believe that Christianity is true, and it takes them through these answers so that they feel better equipped to talk about it with their own kids. So it's helpful for parents who have no background in apologetics at all. It's written from a parent to parents, and it's helpful also if you've had a lot of exposure to apologetics already, because it can be kind of a handy resource to refer back to.
Not only for parents, Natasha, but grandparents, pastors, sure, teachers, Sunday school teachers, all this that might encounter it. And I know that's basically the motivation for this program, is that we learned, surprisingly, that a lot of people had even left the faith because they had these intellectual challenges about Christianity, and a lot of people in the past didn't want to deal with it. In fact, even made them kind of feel bad that they even had the question. And so it's neat that there's so many like yourself cropping up around the world to help people with apologetics, and especially in your case, Natasha, where you have this spotlight focus on helping Christian parents, all of us, help kids answer the questions. Is today's topic, do you touch on it at all in this new book, Santa and Jesus?
Well, I don't talk about Santa in particular, but as we'll talk about, I'm sure, in this hour, as you know, when we talk about Santa and Jesus, we're talking all about whether or not there's evidence for God, and that's really what it will come down to, as we can talk about. And the book absolutely talks about the evidence for God. So it breaks out into 5 different sections of 8 questions each, and the first section is all about questions about God. what evidence is there for God's existence, and how can we believe that God really exists when there's so much evil and so much suffering in the world, and how can there be hell when there's a loving God? So it gets into all these questions about the evidence for God and even the things that people say are evidence against God's existence. And then the book progresses on to sections on truth and worldviews and Jesus and the evidence for the reliability of the Bible. And then the last section is all about the big science questions today that so many young people grapple with about the age of the earth and evolution and intelligent design and those kinds of things. So the whole book is really meant to address this question of what is the evidence for God's existence, the truth of Christianity specifically. So in a very big picture way, yes, it absolutely deals with this topic. About Santa in particular, it doesn't go into.
Excellent. Well, you know, we kind of set this up with this is the time of year, and it's not limited to the Christmas season by no stretch of the imagination. But a lot of people like to kind of go through a scenario like this. I know Alistair McGrath, a great apologist, in an interview with me, he talked about this, where Richard Dawkins accuses Alistair and the rest of us Christians of, you know, at one time believing in Santa Claus and Jesus, but when we grow up, we get rid of our, the traditional story about Santa, not Saint Nicholas, but the Santa Claus that's kind
right.
of come. And so we Jesus in that same make-believe category. And I remember McGrath telling Dawkins in a debate they had, look, I'll even top you on that. When I was younger, I believed in Santa and Karl Marx, but I didn't believe in Jesus. And I gave up both of those and I became a believer in Jesus, almost like it's a childish thing, you know, to believe in Santa in some ways and Jesus. And so, you know, when you grow up, you get rid of all that stuff. Because, you know, there's two sides to this that we're going to approach today is these, a lot of people in the world, especially atheists, are going to use that same approach that Richard Dawkins did with Alistair McGrath. And then also, we sometimes hear it within the church, but we're going to save that one till later. So take us through, if you would, Natasha, this fashionable thing it is to compare belief in Santa to belief in God. Walk us through that and why this matters to Christian parents when we talk to our children.
Sure. So, you know, it is something that you hear all year round that just like you were talking about with Richard Dawkins, that this claim is made that there's really no difference between believing in Santa, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy. There's no difference with any of it because it's all very childish. And so that in and of itself is sort of an insult. And you hear it and you think, oh, this is kind of ridiculous. But it's important to understand what the claim really is that underlies that. What they're saying when they compare these things is all being childish is that when you're a kid and you hear these things, you're willing to believe anything. So you don't really care about reasons for believing things. You don't really care about what evidence there is. You're willing to believe what other people tell you. You're really kind of gullible and you don't question anything. But as you get older and you are more capable of evidence-based thinking, you kind of let go of those beliefs and you start to only believe the things that you can confirm are true based on the evidence that you see. So what atheists are really saying when they compare belief in God to belief in Santa is that we all know there's no evidence for God. And so if you choose to believe in God, even though there's no evidence, you're just like a kid. You're like a kid who believes in Santa Claus, even though there's no reason to do so. So it's really a claim about there not being any evidence for God. Well, the problem with that is if there truly was no evidence for God, I would completely agree with the atheist. I would say, well, that is a very childish belief if you're willing to believe in something when there's no evidence for it. But it's really rather disingenuous to make that claim because in reality, Christians do believe that there is evidence for God and we believe because of it. So if they were going to be more honest about this, they would say that Christians and atheists disagree over what constitutes legitimate evidence for God. And that's really the heart of the issue, is that they're just assuming that we all should know that there's no evidence. But in reality, Christians and atheists disagree over what real evidence there really is for God's existence. So that's really the heart of the claim and what they're saying. And actually, I just saw someone the other day, an atheist, who was explaining this online, and I kept this quote because I was going to save it for writing something about it later, but I'll read it to you. And he explains this really in his own words, just so you can see this is not just my interpretation. He says, "The comparison to Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, etc., is meant to highlight the similarity in evidence levels between entities we all immediately dismiss as false and entities some people hold truer than anything. So it's really a tool we use for establishing perspective." So that's from an atheist explaining why they make this claim. They think it's giving us perspective as to how unreasonable our beliefs are. So the reason that's so important for Christian parents to understand is that this is just one way out of many that many atheists, and when I say atheists, I'm talking about a portion of them. I'm not making a general claim about all of them, but many atheists will try to shame Christians into believing that what we, you know, think is very childish and unreasonable. And if your kids don't have good reasons for understanding what they believe and why they should believe Christianity is true, they will feel the burden of shame. And these cheap shots and these really easy and impactful statements that can hit them will really impact their faith. And so it's important that Christian parents really understand in today's world, their kids will get hit with this stuff, and that it's very easy to take down a faith that isn't prepared for it. So we have to give our kids good reasons to believe that Christianity is true.
And this evidence that God really does exist and sent his only son, Jesus, to be the world's redeemer, there's a massive amount of evidence out there, very excellent evidence of the highest type. And, I think this kind of it points to a time in the church recently, I know probably in my growing up, where this evidence really wasn't brought forward. It was more you do a blind leap of faith. Based on the Holy Spirit's moving you, and while that certainly is true, does not even begin to even acknowledge that the Bible talks about evidence. The Gospels say, we're eyewitnesses and we have evidence. Especially, I love the Apostle John. He said, "Hey, I was around this guy Jesus a lot. I ate with him. I slept out in journeys with him through the country. I heard him talk. I heard him do miracles. I saw things happen to him." This is amazing evidence because all this happened in time and space. Let's begin here, if we can, to Natasha, because I know you've thought and wrote a lot about this. Some might say, but Natasha and Rod, as adults, we can maybe begin to handle and wrestle with this evidence. But how about kids? And you've got some young kids yourself, Natasha.
Yes.
So you've got some firsthand experience. Can kids really begin to comprehend and understand these reasons, this evidence?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely they can. And I think that's actually the belief that they can't is a big barrier right now to parents teaching their kids these things. Parents think, well, my kids will grapple with that when they're an adult, and I'll just take them to church for now and hope for the best. Or, okay, well, maybe when my kids become teenagers, then maybe we can address this. And so people think that, oh, this sounds really complicated. And most of that is, it's an issue with parents' own understanding and their lack thereof about building the case for Christianity themselves and understanding why they believe what they believe. So once parents do have that foundation, it's a matter of working it into what you're already teaching your kids and helping them believe that. So, I can, for example, talk to my kids about the fact that there is evidence for God and talk about that even as just a foundational principle. I have twins who are 6 and I have a 5-year-old. And when we have Bible study time, I have these opportunities all the time to insert what I know are relevant issues into that. So, for example, we could use this Santa topic very naturally right now to talk to our kids. I can easily say to my kids, why do you think, and at this point my kids know that Santa isn't real, so I can say, why do you think that some people believe, that kids believe in Santa, but adults do not? and to get them thinking about that and to lead them toward thinking through, okay, well, their kids believe whatever they're told, adults, start to believe because of other reasons, and then leading them into, okay, well, you know what? Some people actually think that believing in God is childish. Like it's something like Santa. Why do you think that they would say that? And, your kids can start to think through, even at a young age, they can start to think, well, maybe people don't have, think that there are good reasons for believing in God. Now, it depends how much you do with your kids on these things as to what their answers are going to be, but you can have an age-appropriate discussion with them. And then that can obviously lead to the last level of actually talking about, well, do you think that believing in God is like believing in Santa? Why or why not? And have that conversation. And one thing I would say is that to any parents who are listening who feel like, oh my gosh, but I'm not prepared for that conversation, I don't know what I would tell them about the evidence for God. Well, this is a perfect opportunity to say, you know what? The difference between believing in God and Santa is that there's no evidence or no good reasons for believing in Santa, but there are really good reasons and really good evidence for believing in God's existence. And I really want to talk to you about that so you understand why this is so different. And we're going to be talking about that over the next few weeks and the coming months, however you plan to do it. And at that point, you can get a book to help you. There are lots of resources available. You can walk through it with them and learn with them. But it just makes for a really good entry point in the conversation to bring it up this time of year if your kids are, if they're ready to talk about Santa not being real.
Let's throw this out there again, too, Natasha. I think your blog post are terrific resources for this, where Christian parents and interested parties like myself can just, hear all the things that are out there, hear all the dialogue, hear the things that people have tried and had success sharing this evidence with kids of all ages. Christian Mom Thoughts, what's the internet address for Christian Mom Thoughts?
It's ChristianMomThoughts.com, or you can get to it by my name, Natasha Crane, C-R-A-I-N. Either way, you'll land there.
And you're also on Facebook, too. I think that's how I first came up across you, Natasha. And so it's just a true goldmine of stuff. And I think that's one of the ways, too, that people can take part in that, be on, your email list with you and hear about new things that you're wanting to share. And so, our children can really start to see that the things of the Bible, the things of the Christian faith are solid. They've been done in history and space and time, and that as we grow, we begin to realize it more and more. Natasha, I wonder if this has some bearing with some kids out there. I know that when I first was growing up, I just was in love with my grandparents, as most people were. And except I was missing one grandparent. My dad's father, he passed away about 6 months before I was born. And so I remember as a little boy, I always wanted to know, what was Grandpa like, And I remember as a little boy asking his wife, my grandmother, all kinds of questions. And then as I grew, I would ask more and more people, well, what was he like? What kind of man was he? And isn't that the case about Jesus and God? We have all this evidence of people that have asked those very questions about God, about Jesus, and they've got some really good answers. And I remember even like in the case of my grandpa, I got some conflicting data, especially from people in the town that I wouldn't even ask. And they said, you know what your grandpa was like? And I'd hear these stories. And then I'd go back to the family and I'd say, hey, do you have any idea? Is this true about Grandpa or not? And they were really good, about saying, being honest with me and saying, well, your Grandpa, he wasn't a complete saint in the sense of perfect person. He was a saint and sinner simultaneously. And then others, they said, well, that's just fiction. And we do the same thing about God, don't we? That we can help our little ones and all people realize that some things about God are just not true. We don't have any evidence. We don't have any reasons for those kind of beliefs, but we do have good evidence for others. Is that kind of approach useful, do you think, Natasha?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, the example that you give is a great one, because we're always going to go to many different sources when we are developing our beliefs. And we're going to find that some of those resources are reliable and some of those are not. And so how we help our kids in figuring out, you know, how do you learn what is true? How do you decide what is true about God is the most helpful thing that we can do. I've been following a book. It's a especially a homeschool curriculum. I don't homeschool for academics, but I consider every Christian parent a homeschooler for their spiritual training. So in that sense, I follow this curriculum by a company called Apologia, and they have a book called Who is God? And you've been going through that, and it's a fantastic resource because it helps take you with your kids through the questions of how do we know what is true? And so it talks about, well, some things we know are true because of our senses, our five senses. Some things we know are true by thinking and reasoning. Some things we know are true by what other people tell us, and some things are true by revelation from God. And this has been really helpful, these insights, and talking to my kids, even at their young ages of 6 and 5, because it rings true for them that there are lots of different ways to learn what is true. And I explained to them that my most important job as a Christian parent that God has given me is to lead them toward figuring out that truth on their own. And I have made it very clear to them, and I know this makes a lot of parents uncomfortable, but I think it's really critical. I have told them, actually, just in the last month specifically, we've had this conversation, don't believe just because I do. And when you tell your kids that and you put that responsibility onto them, their ears perk up. And they have really been listening with interest to these conversations about truth and, you know, how do we know that God is real and how do we know that Jesus really came and came back to life? And when you frame it in that way, your kids really take an interest because they sense how important it is. And so coming back to, you know, your original point about the sources and everything, that's fundamental to everything we teach them. How will they research and how will they find out how to make their beliefs their own and be confident that what they believe is the truth?
Well, I know that on this topic of Santa and Jesus, we've got to have them become critical thinkers on this. And I know you're big on this, Natasha. I remember I read a post that you have on this, and our listener can too, about how do we make our children critical thinkers.
Right.
And it's so good at an early age to start to develop them, because they're going to have confidence that they alone have to make these tough decisions in the end. And I think that's the aid we can give our children and grandchildren and just friends on all the evidence for God. And pray that the Spirit touches them. And I like very much what you're saying. We're going to get into our first break here pretty quick, but let's set up the next point, if we may. That you have said in your blog that when atheists and others start to put Jesus and God in the same bucket with Santa and the Tooth Fairy, it's actually a great opportunity to be proactive to get them to start thinking about what they're talking about. And so I'd like you to give us a little bit of how that conversation would go, Natasha, but let's take our first break, and then you can be thinking about how you take off on that one when we come back. You're listening to Cross Defense today with Natasha Crane, Christian Mom Thoughts. Check her out on her blog, ChristianMomThoughts.com. Stick with us. We'll be right back here on Cross Defense.
Providing solid confessional Lutheran resources for pastors around the world, that's Luther Academy. Logia, the Journal of Lutheran Theology, the 13-volume Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Global Conferences for Strengthening Pastors, that's Luther Academy. Sign up for our email news and support our efforts at lutheracademy.com or call us at 260-452-2211.
Worldwide KFUO, your most trusted radio station for Christian talk and sacred music. Listen on the air, online, and on demand 24 hours a day at KFUO.org. Listen anywhere you are with your Wi-Fi radios, smartphones, computers, and even on your smart TVs. KFUO embracing today's technologies to bring the good news message of Christ to the world. Listener-supported worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
KFUO is underwritten in part by Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts, whose purpose is to make unique works of art that glorify God and minister to the needs of the church. Agnus Dei Liturgical Arts specializes in Christian art through oil paintings, drawings and illustrations, prints and reproductions, Christ-centered Christmas cards and greeting cards, as well as art camps, group and private lessons for all ages. AgnusDeiArts.com. That's AgnusDeiArts.com.
The Gospel of Luke tells the story of John the Baptist's birth alongside Jesus' birth. Why is this? Live Monday on Issues Etc., we'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on the birth of John the Baptist foretold. We'll also look forward to Sunday morning talking with Dr. Carl Fakencher.
Issues Etc., live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
No object within Judaism is more sacred than the Torah. In Hebrew, Torah means law, but its importance runs much deeper. Torah contains the development of the Jewish people from being freed from slavery in Egypt to being established in the land of Canaan. The Torah, the first five books of the Bible and attributed to Moses, has been translated from generation to generation. Considered to be so sacred that Jews even avoid touching it. Because Hashem, or the divine nature, is written throughout the Torah, no observant Jew would ever think to let a Torah fall on the ground or be mishandled.
A wide range of people claim this book to be their own. People who have participated in its survival. People who have had their lives changed by it. People who have spent years of their lives to learn and understand its meaning. Engage with this book of books.
Brought to you by Museum of the Bible.
So glad you're hanging in there with us today on Cross Defense, because we're kicking off the new church year and Advent season. And we're talking today about a topic that really comes up frequently, maybe even more frequently than the rest of the year, the comparison between God and Santa, Jesus and Santa, a childish belief. And when we grow up, we kind of cast off our childish beliefs, so Jesus gets cast off with them. But actually, there's a lot of evidence, a lot of reasons to believe in God and Jesus. And to help us do that with our children, we have Natasha Crane, ChristianMomThoughts.com. We'll have a direct link to that on our website where you can check out all the good things that Natasha blogs about. Natasha, develop a little bit for us. Maybe you did it all already, but maybe you'd like to highlight or introduce some other points about how when somebody wants to put God and Jesus in the same bucket as make-believe people, how would that conversation go with your kids?
Well, there are two different things that could take place. The first is that your kids have heard it themselves. And the second is that your kids are maybe younger like mine, and they're not necessarily going to hear it themselves, but you bring it to their attention. Now, obviously, if your kids have heard it and they're older and they come to you to talk about it, that's one thing, and it immediately opens the door for that conversation. But I think that a lot of parents are more unclear about how you would handle that with younger kids and how you would bring it to their attention. And I think it's really important for parents to understand that we are not an answer bank as Christian parents. We should not see our role as just being some kind of resource where our kids come and get answers whenever they pop into their heads. Instead, we need to proactively bring the questions to them, because that is going to ultimately build their faith over time, because they've had the opportunity to explore with their parents. So in the case of something like this, with my young kids, the first thing is that you have to have some spiritual space in your home. It's really hard to just suddenly pop up with a conversation about these things if you don't have some time regularly scheduled with your family where you sit down to have faith conversations, to study the Bible, to pray together, and do that kind of spiritual development as a family. So when people ask, you know, how do I do this at home? The first thing I always say is, well, do you have time already set aside where you can have these conversations? If you don't, that's kind of priority one, to have that time with your family. And if you don't have that right now, you know, start with just half an hour a week. I think that's reasonable for everyone as a starting point. And then you can work from there into some additional time. But once you do have that time and that space where you can talk about these things, then it becomes much easier to bring up these topics and to kind of be the almost like the rumor mill filter for your kids, to say, hey, you know what? Some people say that believing in God and believing in Santa are the same thing. Why do you think they would say that? Kind of like those questions that I was giving you earlier. And when they have that opportunity, I can tell you from the experience of my own kids, when they have the opportunity to kind of think about those things from their own perspective, where they don't see that you're just some teacher who's sitting there teaching them a lesson like at school, and they are trying to figure these things out, they become very engaged in it and very interested in it, and it becomes something they want to talk about. So have the spiritual space in your home, ask your kids the questions, and have them try to help you figure out what these things really mean and what people are saying, and think about it from their perspective. We just recently, as one example of how we've done it in our house, we were introducing our kids to the topic of atheism and, you know, what is it, what exactly does that mean? And, you know, my kids go to a private Christian school, so they're not encountering a lot of atheists, but I'm bringing to their attention and putting on their radar, hey, there are a lot of people in the world who don't believe in God. So let's talk about what their world looks like. And by the way, that's called a worldview. So we get the big dry erase board out, and we put on one side, you know, believe in God. And on another side, we put atheism, which we explain what that means. And then under that, we start talking about, okay, so if you are an atheist, where do you think the world came from? Versus if you believe in God, where do you think the world came from? And so they don't know anything about what atheists think about these things. And it's a great opportunity for them to start talking through it and thinking through, well, what does that worldview mean? What are they actually thinking? So it becomes a time of them thinking about it and us teaching them about it. And so that's just one example of how you can introduce these topics to your kids in a way that's meaningful for them, because they are the ones who are thinking through it, and it develops those critical thinking skills that we were talking about earlier.
Does it also, Natasha, instill in the child the parent's attitude that I'm not going to try to just be the authoritative figure and demand that you believe what I tell you to believe, and you picked up on that a little bit before, but I trust you that you're going to be able to sort this out, and you're giving great example there of helping the child start to develop that. Of you know, well, let's work it through together, and see what you know, we come up with. I was just thinking too that I noticed in my lifetime that when I was a child, the picture of Santa was much different than what he is today. What with all the media emphasis on that, I mean, I was thinking the other day, we have Santa now that trades in his sled for a bright red hot Mercedes sports car. we've got him wanting to drink all kinds of beverages and eat all kinds of things other than a traditional hot cocoa and cookies or milk and cookies. You know, children can really start on any level, can't they? I guess my question was, how healthy is this, do you think, spiritually especially, that the child starts to see that there are people that are pretty contentious against God and Jesus, and we can still love them and be gracious to them, but we don't have to buy into everything that they're believing. And I think is that a healthy thing?
Oh, I think it is critical, and it's actually something I'm really passionate about and sharing with other parents, because like I said earlier, I think a lot of times parents think of themselves like they're just there as a resource rather than as someone whose job it is to bring the questions to the forefront so that their kids can engage with them. Because in today's world, it's guaranteed. There is absolutely no doubt that when your child leaves home, and probably even before that, but for sure, when your child leaves home and goes off to college or begins their adult life in some other way, they are going to encounter these challenges. They're going to encounter them online. They're going to encounter them in media. They're going to encounter them even on billboards. There are big atheist billboard campaigns now that say, there is no God. Now go enjoy your life. I mean, this stuff is everywhere. So you can either prepare them for that by bringing the questions to their attention in your own home so that you have the opportunity to address those questions, or you can just take them to church every Sunday and cross your fingers and hope for the best by the time they leave home. I think that it's obvious that God doesn't want us to just sit back and hope for the best. God wants us to actively, spiritually train our kids. And today, that means we have to specifically prepare them. And I actually talk about that a little bit in my book, this concept of specific preparation. You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, all I can do is just tell my kids what I believe and they'll make their own decision. Well, yes, of course, they're going to make their own decision, but there are better ways of helping your kids understand why you believe what you believe. And, you know, if you go to the beach, you are going to specifically prepare to go to the beach. You're going to need to take a swimming suit and a beach ball. You don't just show up and hope for the best. Right. So in the same way, when we become aware of the challenges that there are to Christianity today, we can specifically prepare our kids for those challenges. And it becomes something more proactive and more specific than just a general upbringing where we have, you know, some good old Judeo-Christian values. And unfortunately, that's how a lot of Christian parents handle their role today, that they think it's just about good values and such. So, yes, absolutely. It is just critical that you bring the questions to the forefront and you walk your kids through them so they can engage with them in the same way that you introduce your kids to all kinds of other, you know, non-religious topics before they leave home, because you want to be the one to walk them through it and hold their hand through it.
Sure. And, you know, it's so healthy that a child starts to realize that the parent is not going to try to make the child a robot, and,
yes,
and the parent will do all the thinking for you, and you have no ability and no right to think for yourself. And so start that conversation early, and you know, train up a child in the way he should, the Lord wants him to go, and they'll trust. And I think too, it probably opens up the conversation, doesn't it? That you're bringing up things before the child even brings it up, and then the child might feel a lot better about, well, gosh, I don't know if I should tell mom or dad about this.
Right.
But that might open up that channel of open communication more and more. Let's shift gears a little bit here, Natasha, if we may, and talk about, we've talked about the non-believers, you know, putting Santa and God and Jesus in the same category. But some Christians have these same concerns about Santa, that we should not let him into the church. We should not let him in to the Christian home. I know as a pastor, when I was in congregations, I had some people that would do this. I remember, too, the first one that I was at didn't even want, you know, Santa to be involved with the adults who even knew the truth. They thought it was, and I remember my dear mom was visiting me up in Canada where this was happening, and this activist to get rid of Santa completely was devastated when, much to her chagrin, I had a member dress up as Santa come and give the ladies of the congregation a gift, and my mom participated in it, had a lot of fun. And so talk to us about that, your opinion on, is he just, you know, Santa in the church and in their schools with their friends? Is it harmless, or should we begin to approach and talk to our kids about this matter as well?
Well, obviously people have very strong opinions about the Santa issue on both sides of it. And in what I'm going to say, I don't mean to trivialize those feelings at all. But in my opinion, we shouldn't be overly dogmatic about Santa, because our Christian parenting involves thousands and thousands of decisions throughout our kids' childhood. And the spiritual influence that we have on our kids is much more, in most cases, depending on the specific situation, but is much more than some of these individual decisions. Now, some of those decisions are bigger than others, but in the case of Santa, I feel that it's one decision amongst many. And in some families, it's not a big deal. In other families, they feel it's a very big deal. And I think you have to go with your conscience on that. But I honestly am far more concerned when people start talking about Santa. The first thing that always comes to my mind is, are you aware that the research shows that fewer than 1 in 10 families study the Bible together and pray together in a given week? And the reason that comes to mind for me is because that's such a bigger issue, in my opinion, than Santa. So, you know, if you don't do Santa in your house, but you also don't do regular Bible study with your kids, I'm not sure how much benefit that Santa decision really is to your kids. There are things that are just far more important, in my opinion. And I really wish that more people would get fired up about how few Christians are studying the Bible with their kids.
That's such a good point you're making, Natasha. We let Santa into our kids' lives, even into our homes a lot. But do we let Jesus in there and God on a regular basis? And that's
exactly.
Excellent. That's excellent point.
Exactly.
And you talked previously about this of starting as parents regularly, you know, once a week for 30 minutes or maybe even start at 15, cause some good quality time,
sure.
Talk to your kids about, and, I know from previous parents too, that have started this when the kids are great at asking questions, aren't they? You know, why,
right.
It helps the parents to, get interested in the Bible and ask questions and search and expand their biblical knowledge and their walking with Christ. So just great point that you're making there.
It absolutely encourages kids to ask questions during that time. In fact, you can even, if you don't feel prepared to sit down and immediately start studying the Bible with your kids, if you're like, I'm just brand new to this, I don't know where to start, and that's really intimidating, just set aside 30 minutes a week and have your kids ask the questions. And we set aside that time, usually on Wednesday nights, where it's a question night, and the kids can ask any questions they want about God. And that just is an awesome conversation starter and has led to the most fruitful conversations that we've had, because it gets to what's on their mind, lets them ask the questions, and it is engaging for both the parents and the kids, because they will stump you, and that's okay. You don't have to be afraid that you won't be able to answer the question. They're actually quite proud when they can ask something that you can't answer, and then you can tell them, you know what, that's a fantastic question. Let's look into that, and let's figure out how to answer it.
You know, I hear an overarching theme, Natasha, from you about getting the kids really involved in this, and I think that's just spot on. That when the kids realize that they've got a part in this and an ownership, they're just not sitting there and being spoon-fed all this stuff. They really get into it. I can say, you know, that my own daughter, which at a very young age, we had a great resource in our church. It's a whole series of stuff called Little Visits with God, Little Visits with Jesus. And I can remember going through this with her every day. And then we'd started saying, okay, you know, every other day you're going to read the story and ask the questions. And her asking the questions was her favorite part, because she would always then make up some of her own to see if we were listening. Now, this is spot on, isn't it, on all these topics, that if you can get that kind of almost without, you're not tricking the kids, but you're just letting them have a stake in all of this. And
right.
The switch flips on a lot, isn't it? I mean, it's a very
yes.
good thing to do.
Yes, they engage so much more when they're taking that ownership of it. And like I said, absolutely, when you tell your kids, you know what, the reason we do all this is because I never want you to believe just because I do. I'm so confident that Christianity is true that I'm willing to say, don't just believe me, but do listen to how I'm going to help you learn how to discover what's true for yourself. And those are powerful words, because it gives your kids ownership and also gives them the expectation that it's just fine for them to ask questions in your home, that they never have to be afraid to explore and ask questions about faith, because you have set up that expectation already that you want them to discover it for themselves. And so it helps, it also gives you accountability, because now you have set yourself up to have to be that teacher. So it gives you accountability, and it sets the expectations for your kids, and it empowers them and engages them.
And I think, you know, that it, especially for a child, it lets them know that you're going to treat them on the same level you treat any human.
Yeah.
And I know as a pastor, I think one of my favorite things is to tell the people, hey, look, don't believe anything I say just because I'm a degree teacher who spent a lot of time and money learning two dead languages, Hebrew and the Greek, to be able to read the Bible in the original languages. Don't believe it because I say it. Believe it because you check out the Bible and what I've been teaching matches up with the Bible. And so that puts us on the same level, and it can become just fantastic for people to discover that they can learn themselves. They can start to be their own teacher the rest of our life. And how good for our kids that we develop that kind of love for God's word and to jump into it both feet and head first. Let's end with this one. You know, all Christians, I think we can totally amen that Jesus Christ should be the reason for this season that we're entering. Whether we as parents or grandparents, pastor, we include Santa or Saint Nick in it or not, in the midst of and we have it really gearing up earlier and earlier every year, this seasonal noise. How can parents keep their kids focused on Jesus, the real reason for this Christmas season, Natasha?
Well, I'll be the first to admit that it can be quite difficult. I mean, unless you have, you know, completely banished, you know, Christmas trees and presents and stockings and everything from your house, which I know some people do, and that's totally fine. But, you know, if you have those things, there is an element there of competition if you are not keeping your kids focused on it. But I think that the important thing is that to just really consider what we mean by focusing on it. And I'll tell you, the other day I was reading my kids a Christmas book, and it was a secular Christmas book, so I didn't mention Jesus, and it just talked about wonderful things at Christmas, like helping people and being with family and all these kinds of, you know, very secular things, obviously. And at the end, I just kind of said, now, there's one thing that this didn't mention because it's not a Christian book, and my kids said Jesus, and I kind of closed the book, and I said, that's right, it didn't mention Jesus, and obviously we know he's the reason for the season. And I kind of, and then we got up and we all kind of went our separate ways. Maybe it was at bedtime. And I thought, you know, this is a temptation when you're a Christian parent and you want to keep the focus on Jesus. We can kind of keep repeating, now remember, Jesus is the reason for the season. And we can kind of just get into this habit of beating them over the head with this phrase and they can repeat it back to us. But it doesn't necessarily have meaning to them. You know, they can repeat it back and tell you that, but what does that actually mean? So I've been trying to think about this more in terms of helping my kids understand what it means that God even entered into our human history through Jesus, and move a little bit away from the specifics of the Christmas story. Of course, we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about baby Jesus, but I want my kids to find the meaning in not just that one birth event, but in what it means that Jesus came at all and how the world looked completely different to the people who lived 1 year before Jesus and to everyone who has lived since then. And so as we go through, we have an Advent devotional, for example, and we go through and we have these conversations. I've been adding to that, those conversations, you know, well, why does that matter? What does it say about God's character that he was willing to do this? And what if Jesus hadn't been born? What did that mean? And what about all of these prophecies from the Old Testament about how God was going to save her? So I think that the important thing when we try to keep the focus on Jesus is not just to beat our kids over the head with Jesus is the reason for the season, it's Jesus' birthday, and remember this, but it's to actually infuse that with some meaning and relevance of why does it even matter that Jesus came at all for his life? And that's what we're celebrating at Christmas, not just a singular birth event.
That's terrific stuff, because, you know, so many facets to why Jesus came to earth. And it's a great time of the year to talk about the best gift that we could ever get. You know, I can remember fondly, Natasha, my parents, and I had a grandmother, just the most beautiful human I've ever been around, that was so giving. And she would always talk about the best gift being Jesus. And I remember as a teenager especially, you know, I'm starting to wrestle with this at all kinds of levels, and I'm not so sure that this is healthy stuff. And it certainly wasn't the stuff that I was into, I have to admit it. And, you know, it's terrific now, even on the other side of that, that I can recall with fondness some of the words that she said to me. And by her actions and her gifts to me, she was really starting to let me develop my own ideas as Jesus is the best gift that we could ever get. And then I remember she talked about, you know, Rod, wouldn't it be the best gift we could get this Christmas if Jesus returned? And I remember thinking about that. Oh, gosh, I'm not so sure, you know. And then the more we talked it out, I started to become more and more convinced. And I think her risking all that with me, Natasha, and I must tell you that for a lot of times, I thought my grandma was really a person that I never really wanted to grow up to quite be like her, because it was Jesus all the time with this lady in the most beautiful, loving, gracious, gentle way you could ever imagine. And now I thank God for that, because I can say, boy, she not only engaged me, but she showed me what it was like. And it was so strange to me at that time. I did not understand her world and what she had to sacrifice and go through. But what I wanted to get with you is, when we do this regularly with our kids, as you do with yours, they can really start to see and explore from their angle what I was feeling, can't they? Share the thoughts, share the struggles. And what a beautiful thing that is for parents and kids to do.
Absolutely. When we share how much of a difference it's made for us and how important it is to what you believe about God, it immediately piques their interest. And I don't think I ever had that kind of sense of things when I was a kid. And that's what I'm trying to, even though I was raised in a loving Christian family and everyone loved the Lord, I still didn't understand quite, like, why was it relevant to me? So it makes a huge difference when we can share that specifically with our kids, rather than just teaching them, you know, the basics of Christianity. It makes a huge difference, and they become engaged in it, and, like I said, take ownership of it.
I remember first little place that I pastored, two tiny little churches in British Columbia, and the one of them, I'm packed to the gills, this place would only hold about 60 people. So you can imagine the excitement on my first Christmas Eve when a new family visited us of six people. And I'm like, wow, you know, this could increase the attendance, the membership really fast. But the man, he was so worked up at my Christmas Eve service, because I talked about the relevance of the incarnation of Jesus being born, that it wasn't just a sanitary little pretty event. He really came to die on that cross. And he said in front of his kids, "You've ruined Christmas for me and the kids." And I was like, "How? How could you ever do that?" And if you'd only give me the chance, we can talk more about the beauty of this, the love of this. And it's always got to be there. And I think that's what you're talking about, to have this relevant discussion with our kids and let them see in more and more this love of God in Jesus Christ and the cross and the empty tomb. Great stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, Natasha, this has been terrific. I thank you for being our guest, and I can't wait to have you and your new book on. So when you and your publicist get ready to promote this, and hopefully we can help that, because I think your book title about having conversations with your kids really fits not only with Santa and Jesus, our topic today, but every topic. And so I thank you very much, Natasha.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on.
My pleasure as well. And so we hope that you'll be on again. And Merry Christmas to you and your family. Next week, we're going to have Dr. Andrew Steinman talking about the Book of Daniel. Does it help us swim against the flow of the culture of our time on Cross Defense? God go with you.